This is your chance to make your voice heard during Homeopathy Awareness Week, which runs from 10 to 16 April. This is when we celebrate the birthday of Samuel Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy. During Homeopathy Awareness Week 2022 and 2023, we release daily episodes on the Homeopathy Hangout podcast where our listeners shared how homeopathy has impacted their lives. This year, we're doing it again, and it's your chance to make your voice heard. Recording your testimonial is super easy. Simply visit www.speakpipe.com/homeopathy hangout. You don't need to download any special software and you don't need any special equipment. Simply press the record button and record your message. You can even listen back on it before sending. Once I've received your message, it will be added to our daily episodes during Homeopathy Awareness Week. In the recording, you can include any or all of the following: your name, where you're from, how you were first introduced to homeopathy, how it has helped you in your life, your favorite remedies, and why. If you'd like to listen back on our past episodes, check out the Homeopathy Hangout podcast on your favorite podcasting app or by visiting www.homeopathyhangout.com and type the word week in the search box and all the episodes should come out. Or check out episodes 63 to 69 and also 178 to 187. I look forward to sharing your testimonial with the world. Today, we speak with a lovely Australian homeopath, Sarah Valentini, which is sort of a follow-up of episode 40 of this podcast with Angelika Lemke, as these two ladies work collaboratively using a process called intuitive homeopathy. Now, Sarah has been in private practice for over 12 years, and she has a special interest in working with children and women. She has worked with many families in managing their child's health in an integrated model and has a great interest in developmental and behavioral disorders such as autism, PANDAS, PANS, ADHD, sensory processing, tantrums, emotional dysregulation, and rage. Sarah and Angelika also have a wonderful podcast called Intuitive Homeopathy, so be sure to check it out. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout podcast, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangout. Today, we are hanging out with homeopath Sarah Valentini, all the way from Victoria. Welcome.
Thanks, Eugenie.
So lovely to have you on. We've been talking about getting in touch for a little while, and I have been loving your podcast, which we will get into very shortly. But firstly, can you maybe tell us a little bit about how you first discovered homeopathy?
Actually, I wanted to study naturopathy when I was at school, and I went to a very, very conservative academic girls' school. And, you know, when I'm, you know, going to the careers council saying I want to do naturopathy, they were like, maybe you should think about medicine or science or something else. And I was kind of like, oh, okay. So I don't even think I applied to do naturopathy, and I went down the science route, kind of. You know, I went and traveled overseas, and I was living in Amsterdam, but I was always very sensitive to pharmaceuticals, like always, and always liked the nutrition and being healthy. And I got sick, and my boyfriend at the time went out to the pharmacy in Amsterdam and got me these little vials of these little pills, and that I had to take half of the vial each time. And I remember I took the first half of the vial, and I think it was like a sinusy, like heavy sinus thing, which I'd had a number of times. And I took the vial and I just felt better, but without that kind of hangover, that feeling that I'd have if I took any pharmaceuticals, you know. And it was just like, what is this stuff? And I was just so intrigued. And so I used it a little bit when I was living in Amsterdam. And then I came back to Australia and I had my first child, and I actually had postpartum thyroiditis, which is a fluctuating thyroid from hyper to hypo. And I went to see a homeopath. And my son, he wasn't sleeping at all. And I went to sleep school, and someone there said, oh, you should see a homeopath. And I was like, oh, there's that thing again. I'd love to see a homeopath. So I went to see a homeopath, and he prescribed for my thyroid, but he also prescribed because my son was having this crazy nappy rash. He would just blister like within seconds of doing a poo. And so he gave a remedy for him, which I think Metarhinum.
I was about to say Metarhinum is good for that.
Yeah. It was, and it was again just like magic that I gave the remedy when he might have even done the poo and he was blistered. And it was like his skin just healed. Like it just, the redness went away, like within half an hour, I think. And it was like magic. It was just incredible. And, you know, my thyroid also evened out and that was all fine. So that was kind of this, you know, this little spark. And then a friend of mine was like, you should think about studying naturopathy now. And I was thinking, oh, I had a bit of a crossroads with my career situation. So, and then I saw that I could do homeopathy. So I was like, oh, okay, I might just start that and see where it takes me, thinking oh, it'll just be a little part-time thing. But as soon as I started studying, I was just like, wow, this is incredible. Like, this is really calling me. So I became obsessed and did my degree.
Amazing. And you practice a very beautiful form of homeopathy called intuitive homeopathy, and you work alongside the lovely Angelika Lemke. How did you two get in touch? And can you tell us a little bit about, you also specialize in conditions like, you know, PANDAS and ASD and ADHD. So you like to take on all the meaty cases. So how did that journey come about? How did you two get involved? And tell us a little bit about intuitive homeopathy and how you're able to help these families with these very complex health issues.
I was curious about working with children and behavioral neurodevelopmental issues from when I was still studying. That's what I was just interested in, because my older son had a lot of challenges and I just knew that there was an answer in the Materia Medica for him, especially after the Medirhinum intervention, which was just incredible. And I just, when I started learning about homeopathy and seeing how we can help with using the mind symptoms and the full integration of mind and body. So I was already interested. And actually my son, he had a lot of challenges, which I've only, I guess, didn't actually realize that he probably had PANDAS. And I'd taken him to a lot of specialists and nobody could think of anything, or they just said everything was fine. And took him to a number of homeopaths and remedies would work, but then they would stop working. It was like, gosh, why are my kids the ones that, you know, are really, really challenging me? So I became really interested in, like, more and more and more interested in these conditions. But I just was finding with my son that, yeah, we just hit these kind of probably obstacles to cure, really, these roadblocks. So, but I already started treating, you know, children on the spectrum, or, you know, and I was really interested with PANDAS and PANS because I'd worked with a naturopath who was specializing in PANDAS and PANS as well. And so I was so interested to know that, you know, if a child had a strep infection, that it could present in this way, and that the body was having such a disordered response to a pathogen that, you know, in a normal healthy body would just be, you know, might be strep throat or whatever it might be. So I just became really curious and I started just reading whatever I could, mainly in the biomedical kind of field. I started researching about PANS and PANDAS. And one of my first clients was from the US. And I remember when I'd given her the remedy, the mother said to me, wow, like, I've done years and years and years of biomedical treatment and it was one dose of one remedy and I have my daughter back.
Wow.
And when you hear that, you're just like, wow, this is, again, one of those wow, homeopathy magical moments. And so I just wanted to learn more and more. But I was actually, for the clients that I had in the US, I was using Angelica's dispensary that she has with her husband, Ryan. And I saw on their website that Angelica was teaching a course specifically about PANDAS and PANS and autism and these complex children's cases. And so I kind of thought I'll sign up. And then I saw that it was actually there were a lot of parents doing it. And I was kind of thinking, oh, okay, well, they're not qualified homeopaths. So I'm not sure how much I'll learn. And I said that to Angelique and she was like, just show up and see if you like it, see if you get anything out of it. So I did show up. So this was maybe 4 years ago, I think. I did show up. And from the first class, I was just like, oh my gosh, she's a beautiful teacher. But the course content was just like what I needed to consolidate and really understand how homeopathy would work to help these children. So that's how I met Angelika, and that's kind of how I got into working with these complex children's cases.
Amazing. And what do you enjoy about working on these cases? I mean, they can be pretty tricky and challenging. So what do you enjoy about them?
I mean, I guess we all kind of have like a little calling or something that we're really drawn to. And I feel like I get it. I think I always got it. And I, you know, being a homeopath, you know, we do our training, we notice things that other people don't notice. And when, you know, with my son and what he went through, like I was noticing a lot. And these are a lot of things that if you didn't have a child like this, you probably would think that either the mum was kind of maybe not making it up, but that it was just like, oh, maybe a bit exaggerate, because these things that come up are just like, what is this? So I feel like I really get it. And so when a parent comes to me and they tell me about all of these things that are going on, I just feel like I really get it. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I have that understanding, but I also feel like I have the tools and this amazing form of medicine to help these children kind of shift out of that in a really beautiful mm-hmm. way.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about intuitive homeopathy. So what does that involve?
Yeah, so it's really about balancing our left brain homeopathic knowledge that we sit and we learn. And I'm really, I mean, I think the systems of homeopathy that we were taught are very kind of masculine left brain systematic ways of finding a remedy, which is totally fine, which is great actually. And I think it's a really good solid base in understanding. But the right brain, which is really valuable. I also found that there is a lot of in the left brain when I'm working just with the left brain, it's actually quite a hard work. Like there's mm-hmm. a lot of effort put in. There's a lot of books that you're reading and double checking and not sure because that symptom's in that remedy, but it's also in that. So which one is it? So I think intuitive homeopathy is really kind of bringing in the right brain aspect as well. And what you're feeling, which I think that we all do as practitioners, but that we don't maybe know that we're doing, and that is tuning in on all the levels, like, you know, what we're noticing, what we're feeling when we're sitting with a client and what we're picking up on all with all the senses in a way, and not just bringing it back to that left brain, what's in the materia medica and which rubric am I using? So I also feel like, and I think Amy Lansky writes about this, that synchronicity, but also that the energy of the medicine, of the substance that we're using, and the energy of the person, and kind of when you can feel and understand both of those pieces of the puzzle, then you can put them together. So, yeah, I guess it's just about that balancing of what we know and what we know and materia medica, and then what we know about the substance, and then what we feel in the client that we're sitting with. So Angelica, when I did her course, she was talking about muscle testing, and I know there's a number of homeopaths who do muscle testing or use pendulums or whatever, and I started playing around with that, but it didn't entirely resonate with me. You know, I did use it and I quite liked it because it was like I can go through the books and I can do all of this and then I can have some remedies, but then which one do I choose? I can see stress about it for another half an hour, or maybe I can muscle test it. So I started doing that, but it wasn't entirely my strong area. So I have a history in meditation practice. And what I also kind of tapped into after a while is that I don't need to, you know, stand there with my app or, you know, even sway testing when you would hold the remedy to your body and get a yes or a no. But really, I would kind of match my feeling of the patient with this, is this the right remedy for them by noticing the shift in my own body when I put them together. And, you know, like it's so interesting because prior to that, I was always really careful with sulfur, for example. Mm-hmm. And one client I had, a little boy who has PANS and autism and things, and I tested sulfur CM for him.
Wow.
Which was I said to the mother, this is what's testing, but I'm really scared. Like, he was kind of training in homeopathy as well. Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderful remedy for him. She did.
Wow.
It was wonderful. She actually moved up through the potencies of sulfur, but it was a really great remedy for him at that potency. And so, you know, my mind said no, my body said yes, you know.
Like, that's incredible.
And my mind probably said no because I was scared of sulfur in that potency because of what I'd learned, you know, in my studies.
One of the things I think that's amazing about being a homeopath is just how much we develop ourselves. Because, for example, with balnozoids, we were taught a decade ago, you give one dose of a balnozoid and you never repeat it within 3 months. And so when a few years later, I did Hilary Dorian's balnozoids course and she said to give it daily for 21 days, I was like, oh, but you can't do that. And now I give balnozoids 5 days a week for 8 weeks on end and I don't flinch. And I get such good results. So, you know, just for those listeners, homeopaths are only human. We have our own biases. We have remedy bias. And often in professional groups, we'll have discussions about this because we'll have a remedy bias with remedies like metirhinum and cephalinum. And those of you who are brave can go and Google and see what those remedies are made of. And you'll probably understand why we're hesitant in prescribing them. But once you understand, it's, you know, it's just an energetic signature of the substance, and you prescribe them and you get incredible results. We need to stop limiting ourselves as homeopaths and as human beings. Stop putting these glass ceilings on, because homeopathy, for one, is limitless. So, you know, go have a play, because there's so much to explore.
Totally. It really is. And I think, you know, I remember actually one girl that I studied with, she actually did her final research paper on dispelling the myths about homeopathy. Mm-hmm. And she listed like five things, like, I don't know if she did coffee, but she did, you know, because there was, we were told to never open a case with metirhinum 200. And so she went through everything and found that one person at one, in the literature, one person at one point in time had a bad experience with metirhinum 200. Mm-hmm. And there was this whole kind of story. It's like Chinese whispers, you know, like where it just snowballs to be a rule that, it, you know, based in something that's not probably as significant as it should be. So
absolutely.
I think that's, with the intuitive side, then you can, you know, like the body keeps the score, you know, that we
absolutely.
And if you can tune into other people, and I think that intuition is about learning, like learning to tune into yourself initially and to understand how you work and how you shift in relation to the external world, but also when you sit with the client, what you notice. Because, you know, sometimes I'll sit with a client and something will trigger me and I'll know that that's me because I've sat there with all of my stuff for a long time, and then, but I'll know what shifts in me about them, or I'll know what, and the more you sit with that and the more you finally tune that, and the more that you acknowledge that, I think, and trust that, trust is big. So it just becomes an extra part of your practice. And actually for me, when I started practicing like that, I actually think when I met Angelica, that it was like I had permission to open that side up because at the time I think the NHMRC report had gone through in Australia, and there was this whole thing about being evidence-based and only using, if you were going to have anything published like the Materia Medica, that you had to use the traditional Materia Medicas and like all of this, these guidelines, and then you're not allowed to say this and you're not allowed to say that, and I just felt so restricted. But then so I kind of shut down that side of myself, and then I was when I started when I met Angelica and I started doing a course, I was just like, oh yes, this is, you know, there's flow with this, because I don't have to sit with my book for an hour and read every little tiny symptom. I still repertorize, mind you, like I don't for every case, because I kind of use a mixture of tools to find the remedy, but I also use a mixture of tools within myself and within the skill set that I've learned to take the case.
Beautiful. I wonder, Sarah, can you maybe talk to our listeners about what that would look like? So if there is a listener listening to this right now with a child with PANDAS or ASD or ADHD, and they come for a consultation with you, what can they expect and what will that look like, and what's their prognosis? And yeah, talk us a little bit through what that would practically look like.
Okay, so I have a long questionnaire that I get parents to fill out just to gather the first part of the information, and then I see the parent on their own. And in the first session, you know, we as homeopaths, we all kind of get a pretty thorough history going through pregnancy, pre-pregnancy, birth, and then everything that follows, any medical interventions, health history, all of that. And I think that one of the things that I do is like the sensation process, but I get people to close down their eyes. Mm-hmm. So I mainly work with the parent. I will meet the child, but I do get the parent to close down their eyes and tune into their child. And, you know, with children, nonverbal children, I'm on the spectrum, it's actually a really good way to tap in. And, you know, the mum will have her own grief, and that usually will come up when they kind of connect with their child. But that needs to be acknowledged too, of mm-hmm. course. You know, we need to, as you know, as we all probably do, we need to work with the parent as well to heal the whole family. So I get them to close down their eyes, and I just guide them, and I just get them to picture. And for some people, it's quite challenging, and it's practice to kind of understand about working in that way. And some of them just naturally just go into it. And I just, for me, it's kind of, I always say, you know, it's like following the energy of the case. Like, it's like just something that they say that's important, and I'll just pick that out and we'll follow that. And this whole time, I'm also sometimes closing my eyes, and I'm also feeling with, you know, with every part of myself, I guess, and hearing what they say and what resonates with me, you know, in a way. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, that's important. And it's, you know, I mean, as you probably know too, like, it's quite incredible the things that people say when you're already thinking something.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's quite amazing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, I do that quite a bit, because sometimes, you know, even some parents that have, when it's been so emotional, they can go into management mode of their children and their children's health and forget to actually connect. That level. So I actually find, especially when if your child is really violent, mm-hmm. it can really, you can be managing your child but not connecting with them, because it's hard to connect with somebody who's violent, especially if it's towards the parent. Mm-hmm. And even doing that process, you know, can get them back into connection with their child. And, you know, that in itself is so healing.
Mm-hmm. Have you found Have you found any particular remedies for the parents to help open their hearts or to help them connect with their children?
I mean, you know, Ignatius is always a beautiful remedy, isn't it? Mm-hmm, it is. A lot of mothers will get that. Mm-hmm. I think Ignatius is probably the one, but, you know, like things like carcinosin for the parents that are really managing, like going into manager mode is it's a really good remedy too. Often mm-hmm. the children need that. Carcinosin, I mean, the thing is as well, sometimes there's these kind of layers of infection within the parent as well. And so that might be identified in this too. Like, it's not only that your child has a susceptibility to strep, but you have had too. So, you know, that might come up. And so,
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably the one that comes up the most, especially if you haven't taken the full case of the mother, but you just need to, you know, help keep her heart open. And
I think homeopathy is so amazing like that, because we can give something to the parent to help them as well, because they are such a critical part of the healing journey. And maybe a lot of people don't quite realize that. So I hope that they listen to this podcast and go, okay, it's not just my child that needs to heal, it's me too. And just trying to feel in their own bodies, okay, where am I resisting? How am I really feeling towards my child? What is it that I'm projecting that they are subconsciously picking up on? And, you know, maybe showing that back to me, because we're just our children, they're mirrors of us. And, you know, homeopathy is so amazing that we can actually give even the mum or the dad a remedy to help them engage in this healing process for their child.
Yes, yes. And the thing with that too is that often parents blame themselves too, which plays a part in that. And so you don't want it to be that, you know, you have to heal and then your child will heal, because that's like, you know, but it's just a complex relationship. And, you know, both really are healing, but healing together is, you know, the ultimate journey really. Because often actually when the child heals, then it will kind of, the mother will go, yeah, I think I need an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And can I just ask, how did your podcast come about? Because you, a lot of these mums who are on this journey with you, this intuitive homeopathy journey, because, you know, yourself and also Angelica are empowering these mums to tune into this intuitive side of them. And your podcast is wonderful. It's called Intuitive Homeopathy, and it's yourself and Bridget also Angelica have this brilliant podcast, which I was so excited when I found it. I love listening to it. And you have these mothers telling these incredible stories of how their children were healed from all these complex cases. So how did the podcast come about, and what sort of things can our listeners, you know, just give them a little bit of a taste to intrigue them to go and have a listen?
So we, and Angelica and I were talking about, oh, we should do something together. And I was saying, I mean, I kind of went, oh, we should do a podcast, you know, and have the mothers. And because I actually, when I did Angelica's course with all the mothers, I could not believe how much these women knew, like how much, not just about, but just about the process of these disease processes in their kids. They'd all done a PhD in pandas or autism or whatever. And then they'd done so much biomedical treatment. So the knowledge base was just like, it was mind blowing. And actually, you know, they're kind of, I think the parents are our, you know, greatest source of, you know, it takes it away from that doctor-patient relationship, was just like, what are you noticing? And that's actually how Angelica kind of gathered a lot of information when she was working with these mums for her book, was like, I noticed this happening when my kid's really streppy or when it's really high, or, you know, and this is how these things kind of play out. Yeah, I said to Angelica, you know, like these women are a really great resource, and, you know, we should do a podcast. I mean, we had all these other kind of ideas and projects which we've been kind of developing and that are flourishing and going off as well. So, but that's how we decided to do the podcast. And I was like, I want to interview, you know, this person, and they can talk about their story. And most of the mothers that we've interviewed so far have also been on this intuitive homeopathy journey. Have, you know, either seen me or Angelica or done some study with Angelica, or, you know, been on a Facebook page or something like that. So, but yeah, the podcast is so, so fantastic because, you know, like sometimes I just feel like a novice when I'm talking to these mothers because they're just so
knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's amazing. They really do. I mean, there's nothing like a mama bear wanting to heal her child. She will read all hours of the day and night on all the medical literature everywhere else. So yeah, you really don't want to mess around with a mum like that. She knows what she's on about, and she's going to keep asking questions until she finds answers. And it's so beautiful that you're actually seeing these mothers, treating them as equals, which is what they are. And you're each learning from each other, as opposed to doctor patient, where you're going in there saying to the doctor, my child flaps his arms when his strep is high, and the doctor going, oh no, that's just coincidence, or no, that can't be possible. You know, so many of our patients tell us that they go to their GP and they say, oh no, that's not possible. Whereas if they come to us, we're like, yep, you know, great, that's excellent, tell me more, you know, what else? I think most parents feel very heard when they come to a homeopath, because we don't discredit anything that they say. And
that's right. And we understand how those signals fit together. But some of these, you know, when I've interviewed some of the mothers for the podcast, like, they're so articulate. But the most beautiful thing, and I think on one of them I talk about with one of the mothers about how actually her child, she's in the US, and her child, I think she noticed some scratches on the arm, like cat scratches. And she emailed me saying, do you think it could be Bartonella? And I was just like, I don't think so. She'd just given another remedy. And I thought it was to do with that. And anyway, she kind of went with her own intuition, and she gave Bartonella in a 30, and I think she moved up to some quite high potencies, but it was incredible, like the turnaround for her child when she gave that. So, you know, it's like, I'm not there. I can't see in this moment what's going on for your child, and for you to learn to trust your intuition, to help your child in that moment. Because, and as well, you know, like I'm busy. Like, I would love to hold one person's hand through the journey and then hold another's, but I can't do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but the mothers can, and they know their children intimately. So this is like something that they can actually do mm-hmm. to alleviate these really, you know, because in like with pans and pandas, it's really hard sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't know, if it's violence, if it's severe OCD, the mm-hmm. severe anxiety, you know, mm-hmm. like they, it, you, you don't have your homeopath sitting by your side every second of mm-hmm. that journey. And so have, arming them with some knowledge and some power and some power as well, I think is really, mm-hmm. you know, important from parent because, you know, when you see your mm-hmm. child going through these kind of things, you can feel completely disempowered and mm-hmm. what is going on mm-hmm. and nobody's acknowledging, you know, these symptoms that I'm seeing in my child. So, yeah, the podcasts, I think there's some really beautiful kind of stories on there. So, mm-hmm. And, yeah, for anyone with a child with a complex developmental condition, they're mm-hmm. actually really good to listen to. And I think I've referred a lot of my clients, new clients, to listen to the podcasts and they just are like, oh, my gosh, I totally relate to that mother or that mother. And
exactly. Yeah. That's beautiful. Now, something else that you are quite passionate about is using nozodes in all of these neurodevelopmental cases. Did you want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah.
And maybe first tell our listeners what a nozode is. We have scattered it through some of the episodes, but just if this is somebody's first one, talk to them a little bit about what are nozodes and how we can use them in practice.
So a nozode is made from a diseased tissue or body fluid, sputum, and there's a lot of very old ones, but I find that they're very deep acting. And I just mentioned Bartonella. So Bartonella is a co-infection of Lyme disease and shows up in a few different ways, but there's a lot of violence in that remedy. And it's an infection that we often don't, I mean, I think because we don't talk about Lyme in this country very openly. I know there's a few people that, and you know, like I don't think that every kid has Lyme, but sometimes when these things come up, like it's matched again, matching the energy of the remedy with the energy of the patient. Mm-hmm. So for example, Bartonella being a co-infection of Lyme, that's a nozode that we can use with its, in those indications. You know, with pandas, we can use strep and there's a few different strains of strep that we can mm-hmm. use at slightly different presentations as well.
So that's the remedy just for our listeners. So the remedy made from strep, we can then give to these clients who are displaying these symptoms of PANS or pandas, which is when strep has essentially gone into the brain.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't always use strep. I don't always use a nozode in a child because some kids don't actually respond well to nozodes. So it is really, you know, feeling into what's going to work because sometimes constitutional and organ drainage and maybe some detoxing is the better way to go for that child. Mm. Or, you know, it really just depends. Like I have had kids where I can't do that. Mm-hmm. Or until maybe they've had, you know, 6 or 8 months of treatment in other ways supporting their detox processes or their sensitivities. Or I actually find that mast cell activation syndrome, if it presents in children mm-hmm. With these complex conditions, that it's something that you need to be aware of because if you go in with a nozode, they will probably aggravate. Even if you go in with a detox, they might aggravate. So because the mast cells, if they're so kind of sensitive, anytime you detox anything, you know, if anything's moving out of the body and there's a lot of mast cells in the gut, they will trigger the mast cells to release. Mm. So, you know, and actually I found mast cell activation syndrome, if it's not acknowledged, it can be a real obstacle to cure as well.
Wow.
So, yeah. So
that, any other nozodes that you really enjoy using?
I like the Lyme nozodes actually. So Borrelia, Babesia, mm-hmm. Bartonella, Mycoplasma is another co-infection. They can be really useful. I've used Clostridia. That's quite a good one. You know, Staph, I've used Lisinin. Gosh, mm-hmm. I mean, carcinosin is always a good one as well. Mm-hmm. Carcinosin is good at clearing deep old infections mm-hmm. and that susceptibility. Mm-hmm. Of course, tuberculinum is a really great nozode mm-hmm. For complex children, for sure.
That mast cell activation syndrome, I haven't even heard of that. Obviously, I need to go and do some more advanced training.
Yeah.
Yeah, far out. It's never ending though, hey, the rabbit hole.
It is. But it's exciting and I think that it doesn't present in a lot of kids, but I just kind of, when I learned about it and then I was just like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen, you know, like one child that I worked with, that Angelica was working with that child as well, but that child's PANS actually came on after they'd been bitten by a lot of mosquitoes.
Wow.
And I prescribed Culex Musca, which is mosquito, mm-hmm. and that was brilliant. He also had been doing really well on phosphorus. But then it was like, I mean, a lot of the insect remedies actually can be related to high histamine release, which that's what mast cells release histamine, like, or they dump histamine into the body. So there's this mm-hmm. huge kind of histamine reaction. But then he went on to kind of do more work on his mast cells, and he's been, that kind of shifted a lot for him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he was doing well on the FOS. He did really well on the Culex, but then they did some naturopathic or biomedical work with the mast cells.
Mm.
And then, you know, he's just doing really, really well.
So, sometimes I feel really selfish doing these podcasts because I learn so much when I do them. So you have definitely sent me down a bit of a rabbit hole now. I'm going to be doing some more reading on that.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It feels like I'm getting forced into all this incredible professional development because I get to talk to so many knowledgeable people like yourself and just learn more all the time, which is what this is all about, right?
Right. I mean, and that's for all of us listening to your podcast too. We're all learning, which is brilliant.
That's amazing. So I wonder if you can maybe share some cases with us. Have you got any off the top of your head?
I do. I've got a couple. There was one, I've got a couple that I can tell you about. One of them, because this was an interesting one. This boy he's actually just turned 21. Last year he turned 21, but he had seen another homeopath for years and years before he'd seen me, and they kind of made some gains, but he was in quite a rut. Like, he had PANS and he's just quite depressed actually and very sensitive, and he'd done really well on lactalinum,
mm-hmm.
the milk.
Yes.
And I can't remember what other remedies he did well on, but I said to the mum, you know, we got to the point of there's something, like, he's kind of shifting, he's not quite shifting as much as we would like him to shift. And so I actually decided to do a vaccine clear for the Hep B vaccine he'd had at birth. And so 21 years prior. And also, he was very much a sulfur constitution. Mm-hmm. Actually, he's moved up. He's not taking CM in sulfur, but he's taking high 1M, maybe. I'm not sure if we've moved him up to 10M, maybe. But
mm-hmm.
anyway, we did the Hep B, the vaccination detox,
mm-hmm.
and so much shifted.
Wow.
And so now he's finished that now, and he takes sulfur occasionally, mm-hmm. But to think, like, 20 years, and, you know, I mean, probably all the homeopathic work that he'd done before, and then, you know, we were mm-hmm. working through, you know, definitely was helping him. But this kind of was like that little kind of final key in the door turn, and, like, it was just like, oh, okay, there he is again. Like, he's just out of the hole that he was in, which is quite amazing when you think about, you know, that. You know, because we might not think that vaccine of 21 years ago would have caused such a issue. I mean, he had, you know, long-standing
mm-hmm.
things going on for a long, long time, but he'd never actually cleared that vaccine. So
that's very exciting. And I so often have women or clients say to me, you know, can I still clear a vaccine effects, you know, years on? And the answer is always yes, because, you know, I'll treat women well into their 30s who had the Gardasil vaccination when they were 16. And it's incredible the changes that you will see overall in their period, in their well-being, in their, you know, breast tenderness before their period or their PMS or snappiness or anything like that, just from doing a vaccine clear that they had 20 years earlier. And you're like, well, we've done nothing else. We've just done this vaccine clear and all of your, you know, endocrine imbalances have cleared up. So, you know, it really points to where the disharmony happened in the first place.
Right. I've seen that with the oral contraceptive pill.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just amazing when you clear that from when they were everything just kind of, you know, they get back into their original flow, rhythm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, even though it was years and years before. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's very exciting. Never too late. And your other case you were going to share?
So this is a case of a little boy, and I'm still seeing him. But he originally came to me and his sister, actually, because his sister has PANS. And so I was working with her, and she her case has been amazing as well. Actually, it's a really good kind of example of being in partnership with the mother in the children's healing, like she's dedicated. And, you know, we're working together, but she's always kind of learning and wanting to learn and understand and noticing. Anyway, but the little boy originally, so he didn't really have any PANS symptoms, but he was, he definitely had poor assimilation, mineral, you know, kind of deficiencies, quite small, dark under the eyes. He would be quite lethargic and he'd have little bursts of energy. But then he started having a few little tics, and I think the first one was sniffing his hands. So he'd be sniffing and this with this lethargy and quite clingy to mum, and but loves if when he would come into the consulting room, he'd kind of like be looking at me like, I really want to connect with you. Wow. with his like big blue eyes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, when I gave him phosphorus, the sniffing of the hands went away, and even his energy levels were a bit better. So we kind of moved on, and he was doing really well. But then some other tics appeared. I think he was really self-deprecating, and he was really angry, lashing out at his parents, but also self-deprecating, like saying, you know, I'm just a dum-dum, I'm shit. He would use the word shit a bit, mm-hmm. but that kind of came on later. He was washing his hands a lot. Mm-hmm. Started washing his hands a lot. You know, the mum's kind of going, oh my gosh, you know, I've been through this with my daughter and now I'm seeing it with him. A bit stressful. And so I gave him strep in a 30C, I think. And from the first dose, the hand washing stopped, and she said he'd always had quite a bloated belly, and that the mum was saying his belly's just flattened out as well. Like, and the darkness under his eyes went away, and the mum was just like, oh my gosh, he's just, you know, it's amazing, that one dose. So he did really well, and we went up, I think, to the next potency of strep. Mm-hmm. But then he's presented with another tic, and which was a kind of a grunting tic, like the mum was like, he sounds like a little old man. This is all, and he was doing it like he got started, and it kind of was constant. Mm. And this mum's quite intuitive, actually, and so she does the process, the meditation sensation process, quite beautifully. And anyway, so we went in, and she actually, I'd already been thinking about a certain remedy. And when she went in to do the process, she started saying, it's like there's something in his throat. What is it? What is it? And then she was like, I'm just seeing flies come out of his mouth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'd already been thinking about Musca domestica, which is the house fly, because he'd actually started saying something about being shit again. He was talking about shit. You're shit. This is shit. He's a little kid, so sweet little kid, but saying the word shit. Mm-hmm. And he'd gone back to being a little bit self-deprecating as well. So the strep had kind of done something, and then we kind of had tics presenting in a different way again. Mm-hmm. And then this kind of thing coming back. So I gave him Musca domestica, and she said that wasn't straight away, but after a week, the tic, that throat clearing grunting thing, had completely gone. Mm-hmm. And she was just like, it's quite amazing, because he was doing it all the time, just almost the entire day. And when I said to her, what about the self-deprecating stuff? Is that still going on? And she was like, oh, no, actually, yeah. And this little boy, actually, we've also been working on, I've been giving him lactiflurate, because he when the mum was pregnant, she craved dairy a lot. And she's actually not really given him dairy, but she did crave it intensely when she was pregnant. And so we started actually, you know, I've started giving him that remedy too. And that's also been really good for his, because he's been a mouth breather and had a lot of congestion.
Amazing.
And so that's really helping to clear up. Plus that remedy, like Deferratum, is a really good remedy for the immune system and kind of undoing these effects that, you know, dairy, but I also think for that kind of an autoimmune response that that like Deferratum is a really good remedy.
Mm. And just for our listeners, that's the remedy that's made from cow's milk, Deferratum. Amazing.
Yeah.
What role do you find technology, sorry, this is just off the side, but what role do you find technology plays in ticks? Because I, as you were saying this, I had this little boy, he's about 9, with the most intense throat tick. I actually recorded it on my phone. I said to the mum, is it okay if I record this? And I asked his permission as well. I always ask the children, you know, is it okay if I take photos of her, you know, and the parents? And he said, yeah. And it was every 3 seconds, I kid you not. And he had this for months. And she came to see me and I gave him some remedies, but I also said to the mum, you need to keep him off technology completely for a month. And I said, he can watch weekends, but nothing during the week at all. And then after the first month, she emailed me and she said, okay, we've stuck to your guidelines. You know, can he ease up? I was like, he's your child. It's your responsibility. But, you know, obviously, you know, she said his tick had improved massively. And yeah, when they came back after 2 months, the tick was gone and he had had this for months. And so the homeopathics were amazing, but definitely the technology made a difference because he came back very recently. And as I saw him in reception, he had developed a new tick and he had like a twitchy eye tick. And I said to him, as he walked up to me, I said to him, you've been back on the technology, haven't you? And he was like, yes, because it's school holidays, but his tick is so much worse with just being on technology all the time. So,
Totally.
Makes a huge difference. Hey? And that's a maintaining cause. I mean, you can give remedies all you want, but if the kids are on the technology all day long, it makes such a huge difference. It just.
And I think, you know, seeing so many kids since the lockdowns that are presenting with tics and kids that I wouldn't have expected to present with tics, and maybe they don't even have PANS or PANDAS, but. You know, like it's through the roof, like little anxieties and tics to go with it.
Absolutely.
And I think because, you know, everyone's, you know, in survival mode and they're having to put kids on a screen whilst they're trying to get stuff done. That is such a huge part. And, you know, one other thing I notice as well, really yeasty kids, if they spend too much time, because especially if they're holding or touching a screen, I learned about this from Dr. Klinghart, you know, who has the Klinghart Institute. But yeast actually has like a double cell wall, and in between the cell walls are toxins. Mm-hmm. And EMFs actually rupture the cell wall and release the toxins. So if you've got a kid who's holding an iPad or touching an iPad and playing games on it or watching YouTube or whatever they do, that effect, those toxins could be just flooding the system. And you know, like I feel like that is, you know, such a major issue. I mean, I think yeast is a big issue in complex kids, you know, but yeah, the tech thing is, it's just such a,
it's a tricky one. And I think the fallout of this, we're really not going to see the true impact of this for another 10 or 20 years time. And I think we're going to have to do a lot of apologizing to our children for not, I mean, it's so easy to put them in front of the technology these days. I mean, my kids are in the Steiner school, so they're not allowed technology during the week, and they're 10 and 7 and they've never had an iPad in their life. And as long as they're under my roof, they will not have an iPad. So we're probably a little bit, you know, different in that way, but I see these kids and they're so addicted to the technology and it's quite crazy.
And you know that so many parents say to me, it's just, you know, no, they're mostly fine except when I need them to get off the iPad, and then they want the iPad, and then there's a meltdown, and it's just like, if I had a remedy that could just solve that problem.
That'd be amazing, yeah.
I'd put that in the water and maybe, you know, there would be a lot less
We do have a remedy for that. And people always tease me because they say, you're probably going to say there's a remedy for that. And there is a remedy for that, which Roger Savage in that episode, a few episodes earlier, spoke about. I think it's called BHB, but it's a precursor to GABA, which is to do with addiction. And I think that's a remedy that we're going to be using a lot more as homeopaths in our clinic, because it is the hormone that's released in that, that addictive type behavior. So if we can use this remedy perhaps more in homeopathic potency with our little clients who are so addicted to technology, I think it's going to be.
Is that some dopamine? I have given dopamine to a few kids.
Oh, man, I've got the book here. I want to say GHB. I think it's GHB. Okay. One of the neurotransmitters.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And also, even protecting our kids from EMFs, and I know that that's a whole nother topic. But even using remedies, EMF remedies. Emerald is a good one for protecting kids or for helping kind of equalize them after the exposure to the EMFs, which, we're all exposed, especially if you live in a city, like it's just hard to avoid.
It is hard to avoid. And yeah, we have some great remedies for that as well. It is GHB.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, I had to pull my book out because this is a remedy I'm getting quite excited about at the moment that I think is going to be really good.
Yes. Mm. What does CHB stand for?
It stands for 4-hydroxybutanoic acid, and it says it plays a role in functioning of several neurotransmitters. The main function is a precursor to GABA and indirectly to dopamine, relaxing the mind and the body. Plays a significant part in addiction to substances or activities, even addiction to a certain kind of thinking or behaving, which is very exciting. This is from Ton Janssen's book, Human Chemistry, Integrated Therapy. I might leave this part on the podcast just for the homeopaths listening to this who haven't got Ton Janssen's books yet. They're really amazing. And yes. I think we need all these new remedies to really help us with all the epidemic of childhood illnesses that we're seeing these days.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think the pandemic is what's happening to our kids and their immune systems because of the exposure to everything that we're exposed to. It's hard. You can't really, if you live in a city in particular, but even in the country where there's lots of farming and sprays.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You're exposed.
Yeah. Sorry, Sarah. I'm just so excited to get to chat with you today. I kind of feel like I have kind of gone a little bit off topic here, but I'm just so glad we finally get to sit down and chat. It's just like, the listeners get to actually just, come and listen in on our private chat. But I wonder, is there anything else that you want to get across to our listeners? What message do you want to get across? What do you want them to know about intuitive homeopathy or about, pandas or ADHD or this neurodiversity? Or what's the message you want to bring across for them?
I think, actually one of the mothers that I interviewed in one of the podcasts, who she's a scientist, I'm a research scientist, and she said in the podcast, she said, I was a research scientist. I did everything. She's such a smart woman. And she said, and then there was homeopathy as the last choice. But she says in the podcast, try it. This is like, you might not be able to understand how it works, but try it, And I really feel like homeopathy has so much to offer that isn't, that is something separate to the biomedical model or what Western medicine can offer these children and their immune systems. Actually, it's quite amazing in supporting their immune systems and their vital force to, come back to homeostasis, which is, what we're all aiming for, but also for clearing out infections without using pharmaceuticals. And, of course, there's herbs that can do that as well. But I think remedies are so easy,
easy.
I know so many parents that have kind of gone through this biomedical thing, and they're quite fatigued because they've done all the diet stuff and they've, done all the supplements.
Spent thousands on supplements and,
Thousands. And, it's pretty amazing. Like that client I was talking about before, when the first dose of the remedy, and she was like, I've got my little girl back and I've spent so much.
I know.
Money.
Yeah. If you want to be a homeopath, if you want to make money, don't be a homeopath, become a naturopath because there's definitely more money to be made in supplements. But I would just want to add a little tail to your bit there of try homeopathy is don't try homeopathy once, you know, do give it a few goes because unfortunately, you know, I was just saying to Sarah before we started, I have had a case of PANDAS where the mum came in for the initial and it was just a one follow-up and then, you know, just gave up after that, wasn't willing to try it even more anymore, even though she had already taken the pharmaceutical route and put the child on antibiotics and all sorts of other things and used homeopathy as a last resort. But there just wasn't, you know, she just didn't understand the process. So unfortunately, we never got to really help that child. And that child's now back on pharmaceutical medication and probably will be for the rest of her life. So don't just try homeopathy, you know, try it a couple of, you know, three times, give your homeopath at least three follow-ups because unfortunately people will go to their doctor back again and again and again and several doctors again and again and again. And, you know, even though they're not having the issue resolved, they'll keep going back. But unfortunately, I find with us alternative or natural health practitioners, often we just have one or two goes and it's just not enough to undo a lifetime of damage.
No, that's right. That's totally right. And, you know, I do want to kind of say that that case that I was talking about with the first dose of the remedy and that, I mean, it can help.
It does happen. Yes.
It happens and it happens more than you think, but it doesn't always happen. So mm-hmm. I don't want it to be like, oh, you just,
yeah.
You know, all your problems will be solved with one drop. No, you know, there's a lot of kind of really complex, but you know, when you see something shift, you know, within the first, between the first and the second consult and it's kind of like, oh, okay, we've got some traction here. Sometimes I'm, you know, kind of, I feel like a client comes and it's like there's a whole complex web that I'm trying to kind of go where do we start? Anyway, we start and it might be three sessions and then it's just like, right, I know now. We've kind of stripped those little things away and now we're dealing with this really pointy bit and we'll get through that pointy bit and we'll see what pointy bit comes next. If it does, if it doesn't, you know, it's just following whatever's coming up for that child. But yeah, we do have, you know, a bit to unravel sometimes with these complex pieces.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sarah, how can our lovely listeners find out more about you and how can they engage with what you do?
So my website probably is thefamilyapothecary.com.au. I'm also, Angelica and I set up a clinic, an online clinic where we're training other practitioners and that's called homeopathyhive.com. And actually you can see the podcasts through homeopathyhive.com or you can on Spotify or I don't know.
Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yeah. Bridget beautifully handles all of those. Kind of
amazing.
Yeah, I know. It's really good. Yes. And we're also starting more studies through the School of Intuitive Homeopathy, which is starting this year. So there's two different streams of learning. One of them is like a postgrad group for practitioners. And the other one is for people that either are just finishing their studies or just want to know more and, you know, learning about the remedies and learning about complex children's cases. So, and that's through the website intuitivehomeopathy.com.
Okay, we'll have that all in the show notes.
Yes.
And normally I get my guests to tell me their three favorite remedies at the end, but I'm going to give you a little bit of a different task. Tell us your three strangest remedies that you've prescribed, because I know you and Angelica have all sorts of weird and interesting remedies that you prescribe. So you've mentioned the housefly already, but what are some three interesting remedies that you've prescribed?
I really enjoy Colin Griffith's work and his he talks about triads using thymus, syphalinum, and another remedy which is more specific to the case. I've had a lot of deep kind of ancestral trauma shift from using, he calls them the triad remedies. So using Buddleia Davidii, thymus and syphalinum together. I have a beautiful case of chalice well water with a client and that was healing deep trauma as well, deep old trauma. I love the water remedies. They're so fascinating and interesting. And I probably haven't prescribed them that much, but Yeah, I prescribed those quite deeply.
And I had to just add there when you said buddleia, it's the remedy made from the butterfly bush. And it's it's such a fascinating remedy. It's one of those that I think all of us should have a little bottle of and throw in all the waterways and all the rivers and, you know, because it's a remedy that kind of just, you know, heals the planet.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Totally. I have prescribed T-Rex as well.
Oh, I didn't even know there was a T-Rex remedy. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I did know. It was made from a bone, wasn't it?
Yeah, from a fossilized bone. I've had it. Yeah, that has been fantastic in one child that I prescribed, and she has PANS, but she would have these rages, and then she would go and kind of hide. She'd barricade herself in, and we could think of a lot of remedies for that. But yeah, the T-Rex really shifted that. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't do that anymore. But she'd be kind of in, she'd put herself in a box sometimes and be peering out, or she'd barricade herself in a room. And wow. But she would also have these violent, violent rages.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's...
That is very cool.
Yeah, there's probably lots more. You know, one other remedy that I have to mention that some of the students in the intuitive homeopathy group have heard me talk about, but bedwetting. I at the start of my practice spent a lot of time repertorizing bedwetting remedies.
Mm.
And actually in the complex kids, one of the remedies that I have had really wonderful success, and I won't say it's with everyone because, mm-hmm. you know, that we're not like that, you know, we do still individualize, but when I see children bedwetting, borax in a 6C has been amazing. And I think it's perhaps because of the yeast.
I was about to say candida, yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yes. Like, it's just been like, it's something that I will go, okay, I've got this child, they're bedwetting, but I'm not going to hone in on that right now because there's all this other stuff. I'm going to give that and see how that shifts the bedwetting, and then we can deal with all this other stuff. With the constitution or whatever else we have to do.
Yeah. And just to clarify, do not give actual borax. It's homeopathic borax, because I did once prescribe borax to a client. And luckily she came to me and showed me the bag of borax that she had bought from the health shop. I'm like, no, do not give that to your baby. It is homeopathic borax. Energetic substance, energetic signature of the actual borax. So, oh my gosh, crisis averted. But yeah, please don't go and give your kids borax.
Yes, good. Yeah, borax 6C is generally.
You only make that mistake once, and then you make sure to clarify it after that.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, we're going to have to, I don't know, do episode 2, 3, 4 of this, because I think we have got lots more cool things that we can share with our clients. And it's been just so amazing connecting with you, Sarah. And thank you so much for sharing all this knowledge with us today. And I'm, you know, this gives me a little bit of a glimmer of hope every now and again. You know, you think of all these kiddies that are just so, so sick. And we think, what have we done with a whole generation of children? And then people like you and Angelica come along and share with us the amazing success that you're having in your clinic, and just gives me that glimmer of hope that we can still, you know, save these kiddies and help them and live their fullest life, you know, their most magical life possible. So thank you for all that you do.
Yes. Well, I mean, there is so much to do, and there is so, you know, like, I feel so passionate, and, you know, like one of the reasons that we're doing the School of Intuitive Homeopathy and that we're doing Homeopathy Hive is that, you know, like, I want more practitioners to come on board and practice in this way, because there are lots of these kids that need help. And my, you know, I do feel like there's, you know, this pandemic is growing.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we really need to support all that. Yeah. Thank you, Jeannie.
Thank you so much for your time. I'll chat with you soon.
Yes, thank you.
Bye.